The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, we get a warning from Senate Leader Mitch McConnell.
If the Democrats get power again, they're going to turn us into a socialist country.
We look at the fall of our nation's big cities.
There's a saying now in San Francisco that even the dogs have to be careful where they step.
New studies reveal more dangers from marijuana.
It is sickening what has happened around this debate in this country.
And a look at how nonprofits spend millions on politics.
This is just the development of these voter lists.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com, and let me invite you to join us now by video. Follow me on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. Mitch McConnell has been majority leader in the Senate since 2015. He's endured countless arrows while leading the upper chamber, but somehow manages to stay positive, keep things running relatively smoothly. I invited him on the Hugh Hewitt Show to discuss some of the more pressing issues, such as judges, that the Senate is addressing. But first, a more pressing topic. Senator, let me begin by talking to you about nicknames. I played the cocaine song because Cocaine Mitch is a popular hashtag among people like me. Grim Reaper is as well. But Moscow Mitch is McCarthyism. That's absolutely despicable. What do you think of the last one?
Yeah, I mean, it's modern-day McCarthyism. Unbelievable for a cold warrior like me who's spent a career standing up to the Russians to be given a moniker like that. It's an effort to smear me. I can laugh about things like the Grim Reaper, but calling me Moscow Mitch is over the top.
It is simply an assertion that you're doing the bidding of Moscow, which is, of course, pure McCarthyism. I thought we were past that in this country. I really did. And especially if you've overseen the biggest defense spending hikes out of the Congress in a decade.
Yeah, no question about it. And going back even to the breakup of the Soviet Union, I was one of those leading the charge for expanding NATO up to the Russian border. Over and over and over again over the years. So they'll say anything and do anything. This is what we're up against with the hard left today in America.
Does it help or hurt them when they feed this outrage factor? I had Jason Chaffetz on last hour talking about power grab, and he says they have monetized anger, and I believe that is true about media has monetized anger, but have the Democrats monetized anger and slander?
Well, we'll find out. That's what the election's about next year. The American people somehow are going to have to sort out all of this. And what I hope they'll do is tune a good bit of this out and focus on the facts, which are that if the Democrats get power again, they're going to turn us into a socialist country. The Green New Deal, Medicare for all, add it all up, and you've fundamentally changed America into a country it's never been before. That's what's really at stake next year. Not all of this hot rhetoric, but the cold, hard reality of what they'll do if they get power.
Your colleague from Vermont, Senator Sanders, has proposed a $15 billion new Green Deal. Elizabeth Warren is much more modest. She's proposed a $2 billion new Green Deal and a 2% wealth tax. Are any of these proposals at all workable or have a prayer of a chance of passing the Senate?
No, I don't think so, nor should they. This is not the direction we ought to go. We're making great strides on the economy through technology. Climate change is real, but the way to deal with it is with technological innovation, not having the government clamp down on the economy.
Climate change is real. And I have got a column in The Washington Post today urging the president follow through on his July 12th memo about restarting the nuclear enrichment cycle here in the United States from mining and production to conversion and enrichment. Why did the Paducah, Kentucky enrichment plant close? We didn't have that was our last one.
Well, there wasn't much of a market for it. Unfortunately, it was a reflection of the anti-nuclear sentiment in this country. And as you point out, the nuclear power is one of the great ways to address climate change. And so It was the lack of a domestic market, Hugh. That was the problem.
Now, if I can switch to judges, Leader McConnell, because it wouldn't be my show if I didn't. Over the past week, the president nominated two Second Circuit nominees and a Ninth Circuit nominee. We still have two Ninth Circuit nominees to go, so they haven't caught up yet. Any doubt in your mind these three and then the 100 or so district court judges will get a vote?
Oh, yeah. We're not going to leave a single vacancy behind by the end of next year. And it's noteworthy that the Democrats are now trying to intimidate the Supreme Court. I wonder if you saw the letter.
I did.
Signed by a number of them, threatening the Supreme Court by claiming it is not well, which is utter nonsense, and also threatening to pack the court if the Democrat signers of the letter didn't get a particular outcome in a case that that they filed an amicus brief in. Look, there's nothing wrong with filing an amicus brief. I've done that. Never in one did it cross my mind that it was a good idea to threaten the court that if they didn't decide the way I wanted to, we'd expand the number. All 53 of my members, every single one of them, wrote a letter to the court telling them not to be intimidated by these kinds of suggestions. And that we supported judicial independence.
Yeah, amicus briefs are usually referred to as friends of the court brief. This was actually an enemy of the court brief. And so unusual, to say the least. I had a conversation over the weekend with a critic of the decision to hold open the Scalia vacancy. And it was very spirited because I thought that was the best decision you've made or anyone could have made. Not to hold a hearing and not to hold a vote. It wasn't about Mr. Garland, Judge Garland. However, you've said you will fill a SCOTUS vacancy if one occurs in an election year this year. And he said that's hypocritical. I said, no, it's not. Senator McConnell said last when the vacancy occurred that the Senate is a majoritarian institution that Harry Reid created when it comes to nomination. The majority didn't want to fill that vacancy in 2016. The majority would want to fill a vacancy in 2020. Is that fair characterization of your position?
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. In fact, you have to go back to 1880 to find the last time, back to the 1880s to find the last time a Senate of a different party from the president filled a Supreme Court vacancy created in the middle of a presidential election. That was entirely the precedent. That was confirmed again by Joe Biden in 92, by Harry Reid and Chuck Schumer in 2007. There were not vacancies existing at the time, but that was the time when the other party controlled the Senate, the Republican in the White House. They were quite forthcoming about that. There was nothing I did that was would not have been done had the shoe been on the other foot, had there been a Democratic president. A Republican president, a Democratic Senate. So, look, they can whine about this all day long, but under the Constitution, there is co-responsibility for appointments. The president makes the nomination and the Senate confirms. We are partners in the personnel business, up to and including the U.S. Supreme Court.
I remember very well when Abe Fortas was nominated to replace, I don't remember, but I know very well that when Abe Fortas was nominated to replace Earl Warren, that occurred late in an election year. It was an attempt by LBJ to make sure he controlled the Chief Justice. It did not work because Abe Fortas was crooked. But there is no doubt in your mind that your caucus would support filling any vacancy, whether by retirement or illness or death, in the next year and a half?
Absolutely.
We've heard a lot lately about the decline of the once magnificent city of San Francisco. As progressives increase their grip on the city, homelessness has grown and the city has become unsightly, actually filled with stench. Some organizations have canceled conventions due to this change. But San Francisco is not alone. Many of our largest metropolitan areas run by the far left have witnessed a similar demise. Stephen Malanga is a contributing editor to City Journal and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He discussed the fall of big cities on Chicago's Morning Answer with Salem host Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson.
What about urban finances and these seemingly intractable problems of safety and K-12 education and, I don't know, keeping poop off the streets that a lot of municipalities around the country are faced with?
Well, you know, the piece that I wrote is about how we went through a period of urban decline in America in the 60s, 70s, and the 80s that actually, you know, there was a lot of external circumstances, some external circumstances like deindustrialization, jobs left the cities. But what also happened is that the response to these problems by our policymakers, the people who ran cities and the people in Washington, was a lot of bad policies. The idea that, for instance, when crime rose during this period? Well, it was because America's economic system was unjust, and therefore the cops shouldn't really enforce crime. They should step back, you know. And in our social programs, the idea was programs that had been, you know, means-tested since the 1930s but were temporary, like welfare, became permanent because, again, our system was unjust. What this led to, of course, was rising, you know, ever more rising crime and a really intergenerational, what we call dependency, people growing up on welfare and then getting, you know, having children who also grew up on welfare. And we saw tremendous, you know, astounding problems. I mean, in New York City, which I've written about quite a lot, you know, we topped out at 2,200 murders a year in the early 1990s. Now, the thing is, we actually started reversing this in the 90s because we looked at all this and said, wait a minute, we've got it exactly backwards. Voters finally said enough and started electing people who say we've got it exactly backwards. And we started doing things like enforcing low-level crime because the people who commit low-level crime are also the people who are wanted for much more serious crime. You know, we made an effort to end dependency, and we certainly made some headway in that. Also, get people back into the workforce where they're more productive. And we saw the benefits of this in a lot of ways, especially we went through this tremendous era. We've been going through this tremendous era of urban revival in America, which is really centered around declining crime and, you know, rising work. Now, though, I think we've seen enough of this so that you have around America progressive politicians who've been elected in places. You look at New York City, where after 20 years of a Republican and a moderate Democrat in Mike Bloomberg, you know, you've got de Blasio, who's, a progressive. And the progressives are essentially reinstituting the kind of policies that we saw in the 1970s and the 1980s. And what you see as a result of that is this rising disorder again. Places like San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, they're no longer enforcing low-level drug laws. And so as a result of that, you have open-air drug markets in places like that where the homeless come. People are coming from around the country to live on the streets in these places where they can buy drugs freely, where they get, you know, they get coupons for food and so forth. And they've essentially created, you know, homeless encampments. You mentioned the poop problem, if you will, in San Francisco. There's a saying now in San Francisco that even the dogs have to be careful where they step, you know. So essentially what's happening is we are unlearning the lessons that we learned after seeing the social disorder decades ago and seeing how to, if you will, cure it. We've managed to elect a whole series of politicians who are kind of essentially going back. And their philosophy really is, you know, America is an unjust economic system. People are living on the streets because they can't afford apartments or they can't afford a place to live. Never mind that overwhelmingly the people on the streets are people who have addiction and mental health problems. Exactly. It's really not about our economic system.
Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Coming up.
It is sickening what has happened around this debate in this country.
A troubling update on marijuana. The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. I spoke with Alex Berenson on the Hugh Hewitt Show when his book, Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence, first came out. The former New York Times reporter and very successful novelist took a big chance writing about such a touchy topic as marijuana, just as marijuana was being legalized in many states. But the Surgeon General of the United States has now issued a warning against the drug and detailed new findings on the damage it does to the brain. Salem host Seth Leibson got an update from Berenson on AM 960, The Patriot, in Phoenix.
Tell us what your reaction was to the Surgeon General's report.
I think it's a great day. It's a great day for the truth. You know, he specifically mentions psychosis and schizophrenia as potential risks of adolescent use, which is something that, has come out, but it hasn't come out with the authority of the Surgeon General of the United States before.
Right.
There are a lot of people when my book came out in January, when Tell Your Children came out, who wanted to dismiss me, who said,
you know, he's not a scientist. He's not an MD.
Right.
He doesn't understand correlation and causation. And, you know, the fact that I quoted the best researchers in the world on this, I was still somewhat, you know, they were still somewhat able to dismiss me. They cannot dismiss the Surgeon General.
Of course, organizations like Normal are staffed and directed by physicians, of course. I know this yeah. for a fact. Right. I get it. Right. And of course, these people circulating petitions to get 18-year-olds to vote on making a drug used for medicine for recreational use. Of course, they're all physicians and well-trained clinicians. I get that.
Yeah.
Alex.
I mean, it is so bad the way the policy debate on this issue has developed in this country in the last 15 years. And it is so bad the elisions and the lies and the misleading statements that these groups have made over the years. And the pendulum, I do believe, is swinging back. And the issue, around pregnancy and breastfeeding, to me, it is so good to hear the Surgeon General say that, too, because that's not an issue I address in the book. But actually, the science on that has developed further. Just in the last year or two, there's been major studies showing that maternal use during pregnancy is associated with a number of really bad outcomes for children. And this is something where the pot community, the cannabis community, there are a lot of cannabis advocates who openly promote cannabis use in breastfeeding and by young mothers. In fact, the Washington Post repeatedly in the last year has run stories promoting cannabis use by mothers.
Yes, it's for good parenting. That's what I read.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. It makes you a good parent.
Right.
A drug that makes you dissociate, that dulls your emotions, and that may cause you to be paranoid and psychotic makes you a good parent. It is sickening what has happened around this debate in this country. And it is so good to hear, somebody who's really nonpartisan and respected come out and say this. This is going to be viewed, I think, in a few years as the equivalent of what the Surgeon General did with tobacco in 1964. This is the start of something much larger.
Alex, one of the things you write about in your book, and you take some time doing it, it's one of the things the Surgeon General addressed, is the link between marijuana and psychosis. And that rings in a lot of people's ears as just kind of crazy, especially those populations, 50, 60, 70-year-olds, who had used it a few or maybe even more times in their high school or college years. And they're saying, what the heck is Berenson talking about? What are you and the Surgeon General talking about?
So here's what the evidence shows. Psychiatrists know, and they've known for a long time, that people who use cannabis are people who are mentally ill. So it turns out that when you do the research on the biggest populations you can find, and you adjust for all those factors, including maybe most importantly, whether or not people seem to have symptoms going in, what you find is that cannabis causes schizophrenia. That, in other words, it raises the risk. Daily use of cannabis, especially, significantly raises the risk of developing psychotic disorders.
Former Congressman Jason Chaffetz chaired the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform from 2015 to 2017. He has a deep understanding of how the system works, which you can see in his book, Power Grab: The Liberal Scheme to Undermine Trump, the GOP, and Our Republic. This book hit the shelves earlier this week and provides great insight into the seedy side of Washington, D.C. Jason Chaffetz joined me on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Now, when you also write about monetizing anger and weaponizing charities, you are getting at the fact that a lot of people make money out of this business of false narratives. Explain that, Jason Chaffetz.
Well, it goes further than that, because 501c3 organizations are set up as charitable entities. And what we found is organizations like Planned Parenthood, the ACLU, Southern Poverty Law Center, are engaging with a company called Grassroots Campaigns, Inc., a for-profit entity. And so people can make a charitable donation to, say, Southern Poverty Law Center. They hire a for-profit company to knock on doors. What's curious, when you look behind underneath the hood, is that these charities lose money every year in what they call, quote-unquote, fundraising. But this is just the development of these voter lists. Planned Parenthood, for instance, over an eight-year period, lost $11 million. Well, why do they year after year continue to spend money on, quote-unquote, fundraising? They do it so they can build voter lists, get out the vote, and do things that are contrary, in the way I see it, to what you're supposed to be able to do with a charitable organization.
I think my favorite part of the book is that you write about where did the narrative develop that Donald Trump is an authoritarian or a fascist. On pages 72 or 73, you list 32 different stories with authoritarian or fascist in the title. It's so unfair to the president because while you might not like him, he has not done one thing in office that breaches a constitutional boundary.
That's why I lay it out like that. It really is stunning. They presuppose the outcome. They lay it out there. They make the allegation. And then they go search for the facts. And it really is stunning how in concert they are with the national media, what the Democrats are doing in Congress. They'll throw out a buzzword, and next thing you know, it is everywhere. And they're trying to label the president. They've tried a few things. They haven't really stuck. But I think it's certainly as we go into 2020, you're going to get a whole lot more of this.
Now, Jason Chaffetz, the obvious question, and they're all saying Benghazi. They're all saying Bill Clinton. They're all saying you tortured Eric Holder for years over Fast and Furious. Why do the Democrats not get to do what the Republicans did? How do you respond to those people who say it's hypocritical for Republicans to scream power grab? The name of your book is Power Grab. For what, how can you write power grab when you spent a decade doing the same thing?
I'm so glad you asked that, because, and I'm a little sensitive to it, because for 4 years, Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State. I didn't do any investigation. But I did when there were four dead Americans. I did when it was revealed what she did with the email situation. We didn't start with Fast and Furious. There was a dead Border Patrol agent. There were documentation that started to come forward. Ours was evidence-driven, and we pursued that evidence. What I see the Democrats doing is going after Donald Trump and say his tax returns and say, well, there has to be something wrong. We don't know what it is, but there just has to be something wrong. That is a total sea change and totally different from what I did as chairman. We pursued evidence and look where it led to. They are presupposing the outcome, driving the narrative, putting it out there, and then trying to go find the evidence.
For more of that conversation, go to townhallreview.com. Hey, thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Our podcast is sponsored by Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF provides help at no cost to those whose liberty is being violated, but they can't do it without your help. Call 800-691-8969. That's 800-691-8969. Or visit townhallreview.com. Coming up.
A lot of parents are afraid to tell their neighbors that their kids are not going to
college. That's correct.
Is college necessary? The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The new year for colleges nationwide is underway. Along with math, English, and science, students are also getting a heavy dose of far-left ideology. And that has a lot of parents wondering why they are spending so much money only to have their kids come home for Christmas deeply worried about climate change, Donald Trump, and plastic straws. Charlie Kirk, founder and president of Turning Point USA, discussed the concept of college with my friend and colleague, Dennis Prager.
Charlie Kirk's five-minute video is going to be a game changer. Here's the beginning of it.
I've got a great investment idea for you. You give me $100,000 and 4 years of your life, and I give you, pretty much nothing. No, I'm not the devil. I'm Mr. College, and I'm here to help you finance this wonderful opportunity. I have a whole package of government loans and impressive-sounding scholarships to make it all possible. Of course, you'll have to pay interest on the loans, which will double the cost over time. But that's a problem for future you, and need not concern us now. Do we have a deal?
Yes.
Of course we do. You want to succeed in life, don't you? How can you do that without a college degree?
Charlie, I love that. It's the devil. It's the sort of a devil deal, isn't it?
Well, and too many young people are told and they're hypnotized to believe that you must go to four-year university to succeed in America. So just, if there's only one statistic that your audience takes away from this, it's that the national graduation rate is 59%. So before we even talk about if you graduate from college, is it worth it? If you go to college, you have a 41% chance of not even graduating. Well, that would beg the question, is, do we have too many people going to college? And of course we do. I mean, college is one of the things in America that has gotten exponentially more expensive while also getting simultaneously logarithmically worth less. Think about that. It's never been more expensive to go to college, yet it's never been as worthless as it is today. And we ask our high school seniors, hey, where are you going to school? Not why are you going to school? And look, I did not go to college because I took a gap year. I took your advice, Dennis, amongst many others. I remember listening to your radio show. You were talking about a gap year, and that idea kind of festered into my mind. I said, yeah, why am I going to enter right into college? And during my gap year, I started Turning Point USA with no expectation that it actually would grow to the size it is today. But boy, am I glad that I took that gap year. No debt, a world of great experiences, met phenomenal people. And there's the societal and cultural pressure on our students to have to go through this mandatory exercise. Oh, and they tell me, Dennis, well, I have to go to college because my parents are making me. So that's a horrible reason to go $100,000 into debt. Are they assuming the debt? Because if they are, then that might be a little different of a conversation. And
that's such a great question. Are they taking on the debt? Yeah, I never thought of it that way. Yes, go to college, my beloved daughter or son. And, you know, hey, let's hope for the best when you leave. By the way, you mentioned that, I didn't know that. I knew it was low, but I didn't know the actual number. 41% don't graduate, right? Is that what you told me?
That's right. That's
okay. So now, here is what I am afraid of. I am afraid that colleges are just going to graduate everybody. I think they're going to lower standards so much that you will be able.
Already happening. Yes, it's exactly right. It's exactly right. And so it becomes worthless. And mind you, Dennis, there's very little academic rigor at many of these universities. Very little. I mean, to pass some of these classes, you just about have to show up sometimes to pass and to graduate. And you and I have spent extensive time with some of these college students at some of the allegedly most elite schools in America. They're anything but wise and worldly. I mean, anything. And so if we admit that the universities are first, of course, indoctrinating students around ideas that are antithetical to the American ethos and the American Trinity, which you do a wonderful job of explaining, then why are we also saying that the next generation should put themselves in a financial predicament to go learn those things? And another thing I'll say, Dennis, and this is an unpopular position, but I think you'll agree with it. A lot of parents put the pressure on their students, on their kids to go to college, because they are afraid to tell their neighbors that their kids are not going to college.
That's correct. That's exactly correct. That's all
they
it is about.
Afraid.
That is yes. A parent in America, most parents, certainly middle class and up, they get their self-definition from the college their kid goes to.
This is absolutely right, and it's not talked about enough. They are afraid that when they walk through the grocery store and they see the next-door neighbor's kid who is going to Yale, that they won't have a good response. Oh, how's Teddy doing? They're afraid of the look they're going to get.
That's right.
When they say that.
Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Coming up.
I respect your freedom to believe what you want to believe, but I don't respect your freedom to actually live by those beliefs.
Another Christian business owner is harassed for living by his beliefs. The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. A t-shirt company owned by a Christian has certain standards. There are things he refuses to print on a t-shirt, but there are thousands of other t-shirt companies out there who will print anything you want. However, there's a dangerous trend in our country where the government is telling businesses that they have no right to refuse to do what they find abhorrent. That is particularly the case when it comes to businesses colliding with the LGBTQ activists. Thankfully, the Alliance Defending Freedom continues to fight for the rights of those believers. ADF attorney Jim Campbell explained the latest while on Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson.
So the case right now, just sort of give us the summary of what happened. Is this another instance where you had somebody like sort of purposely go to this company for their T-shirts to make a point and to unleash litigation on the topic?
Yeah, we're not sure exactly why this customer went to this business, but what we do know is our client is Hands On Originals and the owner is Blaine Adamson. And they have a pretty simple policy there, and you talked about it at the outset. They'll work with anyone, they'll serve anyone, they'll print shirts for anyone. But what they can't do is print shirts with messages that violate their religious beliefs. And well, so yeah. In 2012, somebody asked them to print shirts, as you said, promoting a Pride festival. They politely declined but said, hey, listen, we'll do our best to help you as far as our conscience will allow. We'll connect you to another printer, and they'll do the work for the same price we would have charged. But that wasn't good enough, and they filed a lawsuit against them. And then 7 years later, we're still tied up in the court system.
And so, of course, from the secular perspective, you'll get the argument that other similarly situated, different businesses, but essentially the same dynamic here. Why don't you just make the T-shirts? What's the big deal?
Yeah. So for our client, he believes, reasonably so, that everything he prints expresses a message, and that he's accountable to God for that. So, you know, everything that comes off his printing press is speaking a message when it does that. And he believes that God has called him to honor him in the work that he does. So he's determined that that's just not something he can do. And one of the most interesting facts in the whole case is that our client has actually printed shirts for a lesbian musician who performed at the very 2012 Pride Festival that he was asked to print shirts promoting. So again, it just shows very clearly that he's happy to work with everyone. He's happy to work with people who identify as gay and lesbian. He just can't print particular messages.
So for example, if an atheist walked in and said, I want you to print a T-shirt that says F God, he probably wouldn't print that either.
Yes. Whereas if that same customer walked in and asked for a shirt that said, local softball league, he would have been glad to print it. So it all comes down to the message. It doesn't matter who the person is.
And what kind of pushback has he gotten, if any, from the community? Has his business suffered? Because you said this has been going on since 2012.
Yeah, so initially it did. When this first came out in 2012, there was a lot of opposition. There were organized boycotts. The mayor of the town came out against him and said some harsh things in the media. But so initially they lost a number of big clients. But over time, particularly as we've won the case at every level so far, we won before the state trial court, we won before the state court of appeals, and both of those courts said, listen, this business isn't discriminating against anyone because of who they are. They're just simply picking and choosing messages, which is within their constitutional right to do. So they're not even violating the law, is what the courts are saying. And once the community sort of started to understand that, I think business has leveled out and been pretty good.
And so who is pursuing this at every level of adjudication? So who continues to appeal these cases, and who is that side being financed by?
It's the local government. The local government will not accept the fact that Blaine Adamson should be free to live and work consistent with his religious beliefs. It is adamant that he must print messages that conflict with his religious beliefs, and so they keep appealing this case at every level. And we just argued it last week before the Kentucky Supreme Court, and we're now hopeful that the court will agree with the two other courts that reviewed the case. But, you know, you never know. You never know how the outcome will shake out. But we do believe firmly that the First Amendment protects Blaine's right to live and work consistent with his religious beliefs and to decline to print things that would violate his faith.
And I assume you're hearing from local officials something akin to this. Hey, look, I believe in religious liberty and religious freedom. I respect people and their religious beliefs. And they won't say why. So that's the predicate. But what they're really saying is, I respect your religious beliefs to a certain extent, but when I say you should make an exception and not take them seriously, then that's when you should do it.
That's right. It's sort of the whole, I respect your freedom to believe what you want to believe, but I don't respect your freedom to actually live by those beliefs.
Right. Yes.
And
yeah.
And that,
of course.
That, of course, is not, thankfully, is not what the First Amendment protects us from. The First Amendment protects not only our freedom of speech, so in this case, you can decline messages that would violate his faith, but it also protects our freedom to exercise our beliefs, which means the freedom to live them out. But as he said time and time again, he would make the same decision every time because he felt like he had no choice but to honor God as he felt God was calling him to handle the situation. And so, you know, he's willing to do it again, but it's a difficult process.
Some people may be confused by cases like this that are still pending at the state level. When you have the Jack Phillips Masterpiece Cake Shop decision from the Supreme Court, why is that not applicable and prevent litigation like this?
Yeah, so it's applicable in part, and there are aspects of it that are helpful to our client in this case. But it's slightly different in certain aspects, and so the courts are nevertheless going through the process and checking to ensure. How do they feel about how Masterpiece applies and things like that. So, yeah, it's Masterpiece provides help, but it doesn't provide the clear guidance that would settle this case once and for all. And so we're hopeful that we'll still get the win because, one of the things that we try to remind people about this case is that particularly the freedom of speech that we're arguing for this case is for everyone. So while in this case it would ensure that Blaine isn't forced to print messages that violate his religious beliefs, it would also ensure that a lesbian print shop owner couldn't be forced by a religious group to print messages opposing same-sex marriage or something that printer believes in very deeply.
Coming up,
the education system has so effectively rendered Judeo-Christian values and religion absurd. It's worse than bad. It is absurd.
Dennis Prager with the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook. And in it, you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week, with markets unstable, corporate earnings soft, and tariffs in the news, are we looking at a recession?
The economy is definitely slowing down, but this does not look like a recession.
And with an election coming, why do we have this infatuation with socialism?
In general, the society kind of encourages a prolonged adolescent, which this is a force multiplier of.
Plus, a new study on genetics and sexual orientation. Glenn Stanton, a focus on the family.
No, there is no gay gene. People are not, quote-unquote, born that way.
And Albert Mohler.
They're looking merely at same-sex sexual behavior.
All this and more. To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. There was a day when Americans generally understood much of our issues deep down are spiritual. It wasn't that long ago. But times have changed, and sometimes the evidence can be a bit shocking. Salem host Dennis Prager looks at a recent event that reveals how far we have fallen.
Guy got up at a Beto O'Rourke rally, and he said, the crisis in America, I'm paraphrasing, the crisis in America is a religious one, which I happen to agree with. I do believe that. The failure of mainstream Christianity and mainstream Judaism has been spectacular, and it is because the left has influenced them. Whatever the left touches, it ruins, and that ends that issue. But it was interesting. He said, the country needs to come to Jesus. And then he was roundly booed. And now, you may not agree, but why would you boo it? If he said the country has to come to Marx, to Karl Marx, would there have been a boo? Isn't that interesting? The education system has so effectively rendered Judeo-Christian values and religion absurd. It's worse than bad. It is absurd in the eyes of about half of young Americans. Absurd. I have a postage stamp, and it's a source of guilt in my life because a man sent this to me many years ago, a sheet of this stamp. And I framed it. It's a beautiful, it's the stamp of the two Protestant chaplains, the Catholic chaplain and the Jewish chaplain on a ship, U.S. Navy, World War II. They had life vests. They gave them to soldiers who didn't have them, and they drowned. America honored them. They're, what are they called? The four chaplains? I think that's it, the four chaplains. The people of faith were so deeply revered in the United States in World War II and before. And then the hippie generation comes up. If I have you read five articles that I've written of the thousand that are on the internet, one of them would be How the Left Keeps Me Religious. Because it's completely true. I see what happens when God and the Bible are rejected. And that makes me believe in God and the Bible. It's just common sense. When something is removed, how do you know if there's a, let's say, some pillar keeping up a house? You don't know it. But then the pillar is knocked out and the house falls down. Oh, I guess there was a pillar. Look at that. God and the Bible are pillars of this society.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schubin, producers Charlie Richards, David Posey, and Michael Cook, Adam Ramsey, Ben Brigman, and, of course, Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsors, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.